Hi, this is Sam Lagana with the Los Angeles Rams. Whose house? You're listening to the Los Angeles Rams UK podcast. Undenied worldwide. The Los Angeles Rams. It doesn't get any better than this. Let's go Rams.
Good evening, welcome to episode 99 of the LA Rams UK podcast, Too Much Touche. I'm John, and joining me as always is Andy. Andy, how's it going, mate?
Yeah, I'm not too bad, mate. How are you?
Andy, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here, mate. I'm talking.
Oh, don't know what happened there. Sorry, mate. How are you doing?
I'm all right, mate. How are you? Technical issues to start the show. It's always nice, isn't it?
Oh, technology is a wonderful thing when it works for you. It is what it is this week. We'll get into it because we're obviously here, folks, to first of all go over the week five loss at home to the Eagles. Rams moved to 2-3. Eagles remain undefeated 5-0 after a 23-14 loss to the Eagles. Andy, initial thoughts on the game?
Yeah, I think as we all said last week, we weren't expecting to win this game. And, you know, I think at times it was a closer game than we thought. And it simply came down to the Eagles could run the clock, you know, keep the game going and got the points where they needed. And it was a couple of mistakes from players, which we didn't expect, you know, the drop by Puka and that, which is, you know, uncharacteristic so far of them, you know. But again, much like the Niners game, you know, we're playing against a Super Bowl favorite, and you know, for basically three quarters of the game, pretty much we held our own, and it was only that final fourth quarter where everyone was gassed, and you know, they just ran the clock out basically, and that was it. You know, it's just one of them games. You know, a couple of plays, Puka maybe catches a ball, Atwell catches a ball, you know, and, you know, this game could have been totally different.
Yeah, I think for me, like, the first half, like, was very promising up until, obviously, the Eagles getting the ball back for the last drive and then scoring, you know.
Yeah.
It's that killer drive that seems to haunt the Rams where you give the other team the ball with like little time left in the second quarter, and they go and they score to put themselves, you know, either tied or in the lead. In this case, it was in the lead. And then it's just a case of, well, Rams will come out the second half and we'll just be chasing the game from there on in. You know, the first 30 minutes of the game, it felt like, you know, as you said, Andy, this is, I mean, they're 5-0, they're 5-0 for a reason. They lost the Super Bowl last year. They're one of the teams that are expected to, you know, go far in the postseason. Probably give the whiners, and I hate to say it, a run for their money in terms of going for the Super Bowl from the NFC's perspective. So it's not like we were playing, you know, a rubbish team. We're playing one of the better teams in the league, especially in the NFC. So just much like the whiners game, we held our own for as long as we could, and then like you said, the players just started getting gas. And I hate to say it, but I actually blame the offense for that, because they weren't staying out in the field long enough, especially in the second half, to give the defense enough of a rest that they could then come back out and actually try to make plays. Do you think that's a kind of fair comment to make about the offense? That, again, it's kind of, well, you need to stay out there longer so that our guys can rest.
Yeah, it was just, you know, it was constant three and outs, and, you know, the defense, as we said, you know, that the Eagles were just running all over us and basically grinding the clock out, and, you know, they were having 8-9 minute drives, and, you know, your defense is just not going to be able to keep going for that long with that sort of, you know, consistently over and over again, and, you know, that just what happened, it just gassed them in the end, and, you know, like I say, it's just one of those games again that, you know, a couple of plays, it felt like goes our way, and you know, we had the potential to maybe cause the upset. But you know, there's some positives to take out of it, and you know, we've played the two hardest teams now, or you know, the two Super Bowl favorites in the NFC, and you know, we've stayed close in the game until the bitter end. You know,
yeah,
which is promising. It's a promising sign. You know, that's why I take out this game. Yeah. we don't like losing, but, you know, it was a promising loss in terms of the overall team roster and where we are at this point.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that it's one of those defeats where it was more frustrating as opposed to disappointing? Because going into the game, I think we were both in agreement last week. Never say never. If we can get something out of this game, then that's amazing. But we're not expecting, as long as we can compete for as long as possible, that'd be the main thing. That seems to be what we've done. We have pushed them as much as we could, you know, for three quarters, you said. And then it's obviously just fell away. But, you know, I mean, it's 9 points, I guess. You know, it's not bad.
Yeah, you know, it's three field goals, which is basically, you know, they scored two of them in the fourth quarter when they were just grinding the clock out. You know, it's just, like I say, it's just one of them games, right? It's just their quality showed through in the end, you know, and I'm not going to say lack of quality, but, you know, you clearly see the difference between a roster that is well-built and is set up for success right here, right now, and a roster that's, you know, got promise and a promising future, but it still just needs one or two pieces to, you know, get back to competing with the likes of the Eagles. And that's basically how I'm taking this game, you know, both games, to be honest, that we've, you know, the Niners and the Eagles is, you know, we're showing promise and we're, you know, we're a lot further ahead than even the analysts, everybody thought we'd be at this point, you know, and that's positive for us that, you know, it's not, you know, we need, you know, to draft and sign half a team of players. You know, it's a case of, yeah, we just need a piece here, a little bit here, you know, and we're back to competing again.
Yeah, definitely agree with you. As opposed to, like, analysts saying, no, the Rams are going to have to totally rebuild here. It's more a case of adding, it's quality, really, is what the Rams are missing in certain areas. For example, you know, edge rusher is somewhere we're really calling out for someone. It's specific areas as opposed to as a whole, you know, especially in the defensive side, because obviously, like we've said a few times now, going into the start of the year, we were really, really finding it hard to be positive about how the defense was going to play. I mean, granted, Derrick Kendrick didn't have really a good week, but Witherspoon, on the other hand, has been a great addition to the defense, would you say?
Yeah, you know, he's... Like you said, you know, was it last week or the week before? You know, he's just been a solid addition. He's not a superstar player. He's not a Jalen Ramsey or anything, but he's just a solid quality, you know, corner. You know, he's what you'd say is a stereotypical, you know, your number two corner, you know, in your team. You know, you've got your, you know, you'd want somebody like a Jalen Ramsey as your number one, and then you'd have, you know, Witherspoon as like your number two. You know, and that's what he is. He's just come in. He's been solid with a good head on him. And, you know, two interceptions now. You know, he is making plays for us as well. You know, that's all we can ask from the guy. You know, I think if we didn't have him, I really do think this secondary would just be getting torched out because you'd have two corners that basically, you know, would have a whole lot riding on them. And I don't think at the moment, as we can clearly see, either of them would cope very well.
Nope. Obviously, this week saw the reintroduction of Cooper Kupp to the team. He was targeted 12 times, 8 receptions, 118 yards. That's not bad for Kupp. But how do you feel Kupp played as a whole? Because there was a couple of plays. Now, I don't know whether to put it down to Kupp being rusty or it being miscommunication or him and Stafford out of sync, but a few throws towards him, he seemed to be in the wrong position or was looking the wrong way. Was it something that you picked up on? And do you think it's just maybe, you know, it's just rust because he's, you know, he's not played since, what was it, November last year?
Yeah, I think it's just a little bit of rust getting, you know, he's not had much of the preseason either, you know, in training camp, you know, so I think it was just a little bit of rust on his side, maybe a little bit of, you know, because they've not been together for a while, a bit of, you know, let's say communication issues and, you know, you know, but if it's, you know, he's not up to game speed yet and this guy's still grabbing 118 yards, then, you know, I'd hate to see what he's going to do when, you know, he is back up to game speed. But yeah, I think, as you say, mate, it's just a little bit of rust, a little bit of getting back into, you know, this is basically his preseason game.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we'll just monitor as he goes forward and see, you know, if it keeps happening. And obviously we have to start worrying, but like I say, it's just one of them, you know, just a little bit of rust and a little bit of miscommunication.
I mean, considering that he first came back 118 yards, his longest catch was 39 yards.
Yeah.
It's not bad going, you know.
No, and to be honest, more importantly, it was nice to see that actually him and Nacua are out there together can actually...
They can coexist, yeah.
...function. You know, we were putting Nacua on the outside as, you know, as an outside receiver. We were putting Cup out on the outside receiver. We were running both of them as pretty much, you know, in line, you know, closer to the line, you know, crosses and stuff, which, you know, was opening up the defense for us to get some, you know, good yards out of them. So, you know, it's nice to see that McVay has actually been able to scheme things open, and he's not also afraid to put Nacua on the outside and let him, you know, use his craftiness to get open. He's not going to burn people in a straight line, but he's, as we said before, he's crafty and he can make, in generally, the tough catches that he needs to make on that as an outside receiver.
Just looking at the stats, I'm specifically looking at quarterback stats. Considering the amount of time the Eagles have had the ball, Stafford actually came up with a better quarterback rating over Hurts. He had 92.4 and Hurts only had 87.9. Stafford threw his 21 for 222 yards. He sacked four times, though, whereas Hurts only got sacked the one time. The Eagles' offensive line, Andy, like, it's basically just a brick wall and impossible to get through, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the best offensive line. It's one of the best, if not the best, offensive lines in football.
Yep.
You know, I think this shows what I was saying the other week about, you know, you need to have quality depth. They had a starter out and they just put, you know, another guy straight in and they didn't miss a beat. You know, because they have that quality at the position where, okay, our number one's gone down and our number two is basically would probably start for 90% of other teams in the league. But, you know, that they've got that quality of depth because they've looked how they've built their roster is, right, okay, we want a solid offensive line and we want solid number twos behind them in case we do have suffer from injuries, you know. But like you say, mate, the offensive line for the Eagles, as I say, is up there as one of the best, if not the best, in the league.
Yep.
I think it shows it. If you look at Miles Sanders last year, you know, he was, and look at what he's doing this year at the Panthers. He's like, I think it's one of them teams, no matter who your running back is, because of how good the offensive line is, they're going to make them look good. Look at what DeAndre Swift did at the Lions and look what he's doing now. You know, it's clearly down to the line of how good they are at creating those spaces.
Well, they were on the ground, they were 39 for 159 yards between Hurts, who gets 72 yards, Swift, who gets 70, and Gainwell, who gets 17. Flip that over to us, we were 14 for 54 yards. Rivers got 1 yard, Williams got 53. So, like you're saying, Andy, it just shows you got if you have quality in your offensive line, look what you can do. Your quarterback, man, he's 72 yards against Russian.
It's just what he does, though, mate, isn't it?
I know it's a dual threat, but
we do struggle against dual threat quarterbacks. We do struggle against running quarterbacks. Just, don't know what it is. Look at how many times Murray's fucking, you know, took us to the park. You know, we just seem to struggle with that. You know, it's just what it is. But, you know, I know what you said about the QB rating, but unfortunately, and I don't agree with it, the QB rating doesn't take into effect Hurts' scrambling ability as well, because if they added that in,
well, you know,
only a passing start. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't reflect what he does for, you know, as a runner.
No,
but you know, we just couldn't stop the run game all night, no matter what we tried. You know,
well, the other thing we couldn't stop, and we've referenced it in the title of this week's episode. Call it what you want. It's the tush push for me, or the brotherly shove.
Yeah,
I mean. I suppose that when you watch against other teams, you're like, you're not bored by it. But the amount of times they used it against us this week, there's people calling out that it shouldn't be allowed in terms of a play because you wouldn't allow it on the defensive side. What's your opinions on it, Andy, before I tell you mine?
Personally, I don't have a problem with it, you know. If we were running the same play and everyone was saying cancel it, would all our fans be like, oh, no, 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 no? We'd all be saying, no, it's a legal play. We'll run it. And teams have tried to replicate. I think they showed the stat in the game that basically, you know, I think the Eagles run it and they're 90-something percent successful with it. And every other single team in the league that's tried it is only like 75-80% success. That's for every other team across, you know, the other 31 teams in the league. The bottom line for me is, well, if you don't want them to run it, learn how to freaking stop it.
Exactly. It's pretty hard to stop. For me...
They have been stopped. Teams have done it, and teams have done it against other quarterbacks, you know, other teams that have tried it. So you can stop it. It's just, you know, this to me boils down to the fact that, you know, again, we're very light in the middle in terms of, you know, our nose tackles. We're playing guys in the position who are under 300 pounds, which, you know, they're going to struggle against that sort of play because they're just going to get pushed off the ball for that 1 yard, no matter what, you know. So, but for me, I don't see a problem with it personally.
See when you drill it down, it's a variation of the quarterback sneak.
Yeah.
So if you've got an issue with the play, then really what you should be saying is you have to ban the quarterback sneak, because that's what it is. Bulky snapped, he's going to go forward. It's part of a sneak play. How many times did a running back or someone come in motion get behind to shove him over the line?
Yeah. How many times have we done it with Stafford? A quarterback sneak on the 1 yard line. You know, we do it ourselves. It's just like you say, it's a variation. And if teams want to stop it, we'll then learn how to stop it. You know, put some extra big bodies in there, or you know, it's clear what they're going to do. You know, and if the Eagles plan their playbook accordingly, they'll try and, you know, especially when they want to grind the clock out, which is what they'll be doing, is they'll get it, you know, third and one, fourth and one. And you know straight away what they're going to do. So it should be instantly for every team. Pack the box. Just pack in front of the centre. Don't worry about the outside. Just cram everybody, linebacker everybody, and just literally sit over the centre. And as soon as that ball goes, everybody push forward. And, you know.
Yeah, during the game, I don't know if you picked up on the commentary. You could tell the commentary were talking about, it might be like third and like four. But really, they were treating it like it's really second and five for them. So they were treating a play behind because they're thinking, well, not fourth down will be a brotherly shove from with 1 yard. The commentators were talking about what you're saying right there, Andy. The commentators were echoing that all throughout the game. They just need to get within a yard of the first down marker and then they'll just shove over the line.
Well, they did it twice. They had third and two, they run it, which took it to fourth and one, and then they run it again.
Yep.
In two plays. So, they've literally just run it on third and two to get that yard, and yet you still came out in a base formation to try and, you're not going to stop it if you just keep doing that. You know, but like I say, I don't personally have a problem, mate. If they're going to run it, that's fine. Let them run it. You know, if the league wants to ban it, that's fine. But as you said, I'd start saying, well, quarterback sneaks, is that a football play? Well, no, so ban that as well then.
The other positive, I guess, we can take out of the game is the performance of Ethan Evans. Again, I don't know if you picked up on the crowd reaction. Bear in mind that a lot of the crowd, you know, were wearing green on Sunday, that there was a few of his punts. I mean, the camera wasn't really picking up, but he must have been getting serious hang time on it because the gasps from the crowd, from his punt, was just surreal. I think his longest punt out of four was 65 yards.
Yeah.
This week. The guy, when he's on it, he's got some leg on him. So at least, we've got a bit of consistency from our punter that when called upon, you know, the guy can just air it out.
I'm half expected at some point for him to hit that. With his hang time and how high he hits that thing, at some point it's going to bounce off the flipping screen over the ground. I'm waiting for the day, because I see that last year at AT&T with the Cowboys, one of the punters did that and whacked it off the screen. I'm half expecting at some point for the punt to go up and we just did boing. It's like, yeah, you just hit the flipping screen.
It would be interesting to see what happened. But just to wrap up the loss to the Eagles before we move on, we've got some comments that's came in from some people just to add in here. In terms of picking someone. Was there anyone that stood out that you would class like performed well this week? Because at the end of the day, we have to name our Rams player of the week, win or loss. Is there anyone that stood out for you?
Yeah, for me, probably say Ernest Jones, to be honest. The guy was all over the field. He made, you know, three tackles for loss. You know, the guy was just, again, Mr. Consistent all over the field. And, you know, he's, I think even now some, you know, NFL analysts and everything are starting to actually recognize the guy and starting to give him some credit now as, you know, yeah. I'm not saying he's, you know, he's not, a, you know, he's not in the conversations yet for top 10 or anything or top five, but you know, they are saying he is getting close to that point where you do have to start having the conversation about the guy because of how well he's played, not just in this game, but throughout the season so far. So if I was going to give the ball to anybody, it'd probably be him actually.
I would say that's a fair call because he actually leads us in tackling so far this season. So I would say it's actually quite a fair one to make. So I will agree with you that, and we'll name Ernest Jones as our Week 5 Player of the Week. So just turning to some comments that we got in. Vince Kitagawa says he reckons that we are where he thought he'd be after the first five. Next two games, Arizona and Pittsburgh, are winnable at home. If we don't start winning home games soon, every game's going to be a road game. And that's also in reference to, you know, way fans coming to the game, which is echoed in James Pearson's comment. What's with so many Eagles fans also coming off home games with our own fans and support? This is an issue that's not limited to us, and we're at, it's good that we're seeing this more in other teams throughout the league. What do you think that the Rams need to do, Andy, to, you know, up the attendance from our own fans?
From what I've seen from a few people, start by taking the ticket prices down a little bit because they're pricing people out of games, apparently.
Yeah. You know, I've seen for this week you can get tickets as low as $37.
Yeah, I think that's literally like the up with the gods, mate, where you can barely see the field. You know,
you've got Oculus, it's fine.
Yeah, but you know, unfortunately, LA is, you know, one of them. As we've all said, it's a fickle market, mate. And you know, you've got to have consistent success, I think, to get, you know, the fans on side. And you know, we're still, you know, I know we've been in the what, 5-6 years, if not more now, back in LA, but you know, we've got to get a couple of generations again of fans, because predominantly it has, you know, over the last number of years been a Raiders city, a Winers city, you know. And again, you know, the Eagles do travel well, although they do have, they're one of those teams where their fan base travels well. And I suppose as well, another thing is, you know, people who just basically bought tickets to basically sell them throughout the season, that should not be allowed. It should be a case of that whoever's seats they are with their season tickets at the end of the year should be, well, sorry, you're going to lose them because you're not using them.
Yeah.
You've just bought them and, you know, I don't know, selling them tickets for an extra 20, 30 quid a game, you know, making a profit off the ticket. You know, they're not bothered either selling it to, as long as they're getting their cash for it, and that's the issue.
I think it'll just take time, like you said, it's a generational thing. Might only be 5 or 6 years, but that's not a long time in terms of rebuilding a football fan base.
So say anybody really over the age of, you know, now 5 is probably, you know, that following the parents, who are probably, as I say, Raiders, Winers, Cowboys fans, you know, and it's going to take time for that. And, you know, it's going to have to be success as well before, you know, I think the Super Bowl will obviously have helped, but we need consistent success over the next number of years to keep the fans interested in the, you know, I think the team is doing the right thing, reaching out in the community, doing community stuff as well. That will get them, you know, on the map as a team as well.
Yeah, but I think, like you said, the ticket price and structure needs to be looked at.
Yeah.
Because it's great doing the things like, say, the community. And obviously, they've got one eye on the next generation, so like targeting that younger audience, but make the games accessible for them to then come to the games. You know, instead of allowing people to sell tickets to opposing fans, I don't care. Give the tickets away to the schools.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Get them along, get them interested in that. But yeah, Matthew Ellis said, frustrating, but we've got to look at it in context of where we are as a team. We went toe to toe with one of the best teams in the NFC. And a few weeks ago, competed with the best. Some positives, some negatives. Byron Young looks very good indeed. Byron Young, Andy, what's your opinion of him so far?
Yeah, I think overall he's come in and looked probably a little bit better than I thought he was going to be honest. If he can get himself a consistent pass rush skill set behind his belt, which, you know, he's got no one better to learn them from than Aaron Donald, I do feel that, you know, this guy, I'm not saying the guy's ever going to be, you know, a number one's, you know, superstar pass rusher, but if he's a number two or a number three, you know, a few years down the line for us, for where we picked him up in the draft, that's great. Yeah, but I do think, you know, you know, we've, like with everything else, you know, there's been positives with him, there's been negatives, you know, just things. But a lot of it is just rookie mistakes, especially, you know, in the run game. He just kind of, like I said the other week, go a little bit missing in the run game, or tries to, you know, make the big splash play and is in the wrong place. And that's just something that I think a lot of young pass rushers, you know, do need to learn with experience. Yeah. And hopefully the more, you know, he's looking better with each game. And that's the positive thing I'm taking out of it, is each game that he's playing, he's looking more and more positive and making the right steps, and looks like he's taken that coaching in and actually, you know, putting the product on the field.
Yep. Commenting from Jack Stevens, this is a bit of a long one, so bear with me here, actually. I'm going to have to copy and paste out because it's that big. Lost the line on both sides of the ball in the second half. That's fair enough to say. The line took over the game, which it did, yep. And exhausted their defence by taking so much time off the clock. The only positive from it was that from our almost 50 minutes possession time in the second half, we only gave up 2 field goals, which is not bad, I guess. But the damage was already done. Our O-line that couldn't hold up enough to give Stafford time, particularly in the second half. Now, the reason why I'm blank for comment, but I want to bring up is the next part. If Stafford would have hit a couple of the long throws, especially the 1-2-2 and he stride over the middle, it would have been a different game. I think the team has potential. We need to get better at corner and get pressure on the quarterback, even from linebacker edge. Cut look good, but you've got to wonder, so he kind of lost that slight step on deep routes. Back to you next week. The cutback we've already covered. It's probably just rust. But Stafford one, especially that one to Atwell. Atwell was gone if he caught that ball, and it was a completely different ball game if he caught it, Andy, wouldn't it have been?
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, top of the show, you know, it was just one of them. You know, Stafford probably wants one or two of his throws back that, you know, he just, you know, aired it out a little bit too much, or in a couple of them was just, you know, didn't quite get it in the right stride, you know, for the receiver. But I do wonder, you know, obviously he did have this injury. I do find with Stafford, when he starts getting knocked up and he starts getting banged up, he does start, his accuracy does tend to wobble a little bit. And I'm just wondering if maybe because of his injuries and, you know, this hip injury, he's not quite 100% to, you know, and that's what's causing some of these little errant throws again, because he is knocked up.
Yep. So that does it for the comments we got in from you guys. Thanks for that, folks. Moving on to other news, and the kind of big news this week coming out of Rams is Van Jefferson has been traded to the Eagles along with a 7th-round 2025 pick for a 6th-round 2025 pick. We talked about this, I think it was last week, Andy, and I think we said that we were expecting by at the end of this year Van Jefferson to probably be released. Is it a surprise to see him traded instead of seeing out the year and just being released?
It was a little bit, because we are again lacking depth behind him. If an injury happens, you know, we've already seen, you know, Cup is just coming back off an injury. Nakua is known throughout his college career as being injury prone, so it kind of shocked me that we weren't just going to keep him as a depth piece, you know, and then, you know, because he's, to me, he'd still be a very good number four, you know, and you know, just let him walk away at the end of the year. But, you know, obviously maybe the team basically said to him, and he's like, you know, he wanted to go, because it does sound like, from what McVay and that has said, this was something he want, you know, it was discussed with him, and this was the decision between the two of them. I'm just, to be honest, kind of shocked that if more than anything, he wasn't used as a trade piece to maybe bring somebody else in.
Yeah.
You know, because there's, you know, teams out there who could potentially, you know, need some quality at wide receiver, you know, and we could have maybe used them as part of a package to maybe bring a corner or a, you know, a edge rusher in to sort of maybe help the team a little bit more. So that was the part I was shocked. And I don't know, this again, it brings up my questions for the back office, front office. You tell it, the guy is got to be worth more than 20, 25, six round pick for a seventh round pick. It just feels like it was, all right, another Ramsey-esque of we'll just take whatever to get rid of you and, you know,
yeah,
you know, if you genuinely wanted to trade him, why couldn't we got a pick for the upcoming draft, you know, when we probably really do need this? Or, yeah, you know, we'd have been better off, to me, we'd have been better off hanging on to him in that case, letting him go at the end of the year, letting him hit free agency, got the compensatory pick for him, which, you know, depending on what the contract was you got, you could have been looking at a third or a fourth round extra pick
in, yeah,
this year's draft. So that bit, yeah, just doesn't make sense to me.
For me, when I seen it was gone, that when I seen he's been traded for a late round pick, initially I thought it was the upcoming draft, and I thought, right, okay, fair enough. For if it's a late, the late in the next draft coming up, but to see it's for 2025, like you said, Andy, like surely the guy's worth a bit more than that. I mean, you're talking last year he was a number two receiver. You know, and well, he was supposed to be, but then he was obviously out for injured for quite a while. And he was always seen as a deep threat. I mean, I understand that he obviously wants to play. We saw this week that there isn't a, with Cup fit, there's not actually a place for him in that way down the right wide receiver core. Because Cup and the Nakua can coexist. We saw that. And McVay is obviously, he'll take maybe a couple of weeks to properly sort out, but he's got an idea how we can utilise both of them at the same time as well as individually. And as part of that, you know, Van Jefferson's just, he's the forgotten man, unfortunately. So can understand that he's like, well, I want to play, I don't want to be in the sidelines. And so I don't blame the guy for wanting to move on, and at least we have moved him on and got something, I guess, from, again, like you said, though, back office. Got to do better with these trades and get us better. I was personally surprised that we didn't go knocking on Carolina's door, because I believe that's where his dad's coaching now.
Yeah.
But I think the reason that didn't happen is because the where he would fit in terms of the depth, he would fit more in with the Falcons' wide receiver depth is like, as opposed to the Panthers, who are probably looking for more wide receiver one as opposed to a two and a three. Looking online, I was interested to see what Falcons fans actually thought about this trade. And in general, they are, it's probably more kind of towards 50-50, but in general, it felt like they're more positive about it, and they're quite happy to have him. So, you know, he was a decent receiver. He wasn't a great receiver, but he was decent. He was there for us when we needed him. You know, he was the first touchdown of the Stafford era, you know, so he served us well. He goes with all our best wishes, I think.
Yeah.
And
I think, like, you know, I said in the Discord group, I think the guy has had a lot of potential. I think it was just injuries and, you know, chopping and changing and out the team. Yeah. And, you know, especially, you know, last season, it was Cup or nothing, basically, for the team. And, you know, he's got the talent, you know, maybe it's, you know, he's just a bit of confidence again, you know, maybe he used to be one of those receivers. If he's got the confidence, he's great. If he loses the confidence, he kind of can struggle a little bit. But yeah, in terms of at the moment on the Falcons depth chart, he's listed as wide receiver 3 or 4, depending on, you know, whether he can overtake Cadarell Hodge, who used to be with us, and Scotty Miller from the Falcons, who they signed. So, you know, he's not even guaranteed, though, he's going to get game time. Whereas, to me, if he'd have gone somewhere like the Panthers, he's probably more likely to have got the game time. You know, as we said, he could have been used as a trade piece for maybe a, you know, for Brian Burns. You know, I think at the moment, the way the Panthers are, they'd be happy with a wide receiver too because of how poorly theirs are playing.
Yeah.
Outside of Adam Thielen.
On that topic that you bring up there about a trade piece, so with Jefferson going out, it brings our cap space to around $6.1 million. So I know what I was saying about the Jefferson wanted to move on because he wanted to play, which is fair enough. Was there a reason he was moved on now, as opposed to, like you said, just waiting and just taking the comp pick for him when he signs elsewhere? Because we are looking to bring someone in. So what's your thoughts on this, Andy? Do you think the Rams are actively seeking to trade to bring someone in, or do you think it's one of those ones that, yeah, we'll get what cap room we can get together and just kind of play it out? We can play out the next couple of weeks until the trade deadline, which I believe is on Halloween, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, Halloween. 4 p.m. Eastern on the 31st of October is the deadline.
So do you think we'll put ourselves mission to get as much cap room in place and just wait to see how the next couple of weeks go? Because if, you know, win the next couple of games, then we could be on a winning record, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. I feel that's what the team's going to do. They're going to let the next couple of weeks ride out, see what's happening, see if any players, you know, what players come up on the block, and then, you know, sort of they'll make a decision from there. If it's, you know, if we've got a winning record, then, you know, they'll probably be like, right, let's try and get some players in and go to, you know, try and make a playoff push in a weak NFC, you know. If we've got a losing record, I could see this team basically just sitting back and saying, you know what, we'll just keep the draft picks and we'll see, you know, we'll keep them for the draft next year and bring young talent in. Because, you know, whoever we bring in, we're probably going to have to pay, you know. But it does feel, like I say, they're a little bit like they're clearing a bit of space just in case there is somebody that they want to, you know, bring in the trade deadline. So I think it's going to be an interesting couple of weeks. And obviously, you know, the analyst chat and the Twitter chat has all been, you know, who's likely to, you know, get signed. And, you know, I think the three positions that we all clearly can identify that we need upgrades is an edge rusher, which obviously opens up the, you know, we tried to trade for Brian Burns last year and got fobbed off. Could we maybe get it over the line this year? Because, you know, he's on his 50-year option. He's going to want paying. Carolina haven't agreed a contract. And basically, he turned around at the start of the season and basically went, he's not discussing it now until after the end of the year because he just wants to concentrate, which tells me that's normally the sort of talk if, you know, a player's agent and him want to basically get out.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, Chase Young not getting his 50-year option picked up is the other one that people are talking about.
Yeah.
I'm on the fence with that one because the guy is injury prone and hasn't lived up to the hype. You know, he came out in the draft as, you know, oh, he's going to be the next, you know, Miles Garrett sort of, you know, Bosa brother sort of player. And he's just not lived up to the hype. And it's just, I don't know whether it's just something there, he's let the hype get up to his head or something. So I'd be very wary on that one personally.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, cornerback, you know, we need to start, you know, looking maybe something better than Kendrick because, you know, the guy is a bit of a liability. I think officially he is the slowest corner in the NFL, starting corner in the NFL on his 40 time, and it does show. He cannot keep pace with even, you know, average wide receivers. You know, that's where you start looking at, you know, the Broncos seem like they're in a fire sale moment. Could we potentially snag a Pat Surtain? And, you know, we've basically got a younger version of Jalen Ramsey again. You know, he doesn't need his contract for another 2 years. I think another year or two. Or maybe, you know, somebody like a Baron Brown and Nick Benito, you know, who are young, up-and-coming edge rushers who maybe, you know, could give us a shot. So, I think the other two positions, I think teams forget, we really need another middle linebacker to play alongside Jones because, I'm sorry, Roseboom, the guy's a bloody liability. I think I could play middle linebacker better than that guy could. I swear to God. The guy can't cover space. He can't cover, you know, he can't defend the run very well. He's just very poor, in my opinion. He's special teams sort of player at best, and he should not be starting. And the other one would be sort of a bigger body in the middle as a defensive tackle, especially now we've lost Bobby Brown. We've got nobody now over 300 pounds to play on the line. Yeah. Teams, as we've just saw this week, they're just going to run all over us because they're going to be able to push those guys back out the way. You know, so maybe we need to bring in, you know, a bigger bodied player. You know, unfortunately, D tackles are very rare to get traded because teams have got good D tackles, want to keep them because of their weight in gold.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it'd be a difficult, maybe, a bit more of an expensive one, but, you know, they're the sort of positions if we're going to upgrade, you know, I'd like to see us maybe grab one of them. You know, we'd all love the splashy Brian Burns, Chase Young sort of pick, but maybe, you know, like I say, the other three positions might be more beneficial for us because, you know, we've got, is it Nick Hampton's just come back? Oh, no, not man, Hampton as well has just come back this week. Nick Hampton's coming back, and we've got Mathis who's just come back this week. You know, two promising players. So, you know, I'd like to see maybe let them get the game time first and then see, rather than just stunting what little, you know, any chance of them getting any growth personally on the edge.
Yep. For me, I think the edge and corner are the two positions that, if we are going to bring someone in now, I would really like to see as target. It'd be nice to have for someone better on the offensive line, and also the defensive line. But I think getting pressures on your quarterback is something that really we need on this defense. Having an off rate at edge would alleviate pressure on Aaron Donald, and in terms of the amount of guys covering him, you know, it might just drop down to two instead of three. Because I've seen, is it Slater, the rookie for the Eagles?
Carter.
That's it. Yep.
Yeah.
Carter goes on about, like, Aaron Donald, couldn't get him any pressures on Hurts this week. Look at Carter, he done it with ease. And it's like, how many people were trying to cover Carter? Because it was maybe half of what was covering Aaron Donald. Like, it really frustrates me.
Yeah.
The analysts and, you know, pundits always overlook that Aaron Donald has at least two guys covering him every single play. No one ever goes man to man with Aaron Donald. It's always two to one Aaron Donald, and, you know, sometimes that's
The only time all game I saw him go one-on-one was a few times against Lane Johnson, who, to be honest, is the best right tackle in the league. So it was, you know, but edge is not traditionally where Aaron Donald plays.
Yeah. He's not an edge rusher. I'm not saying he is, sorry. Yeah. But
that's what I'm saying, though.
How good Aaron Donald is, he gets treated like he's an edge rusher and forgotten he's not. He's a defensive tackle.
Yeah, he's more D tackle sort of, you know, area of the field, you know, and, you know, he was going up against, you know, the guy. As much as he's bloody quick, he's quick, you know, he's not, you know, Micah Parsons speed where he can just run round, you know, he has, you know, and he's obviously a few years older as well, so he's probably losing that half a step in his speed. But, you know, like I say, you know, Aaron Donald's going up against, you know, two or three of the best defensive line in the league every flipping snap. Jalen Carter was going one-on-one with, you know, Shelton Coleman or, you know,
there's no competition.
Dotson, yeah, he's going up against an average, and I'm being generous here at the moment, probably an average line.
You know, I don't think you can make the comparison when you look at who they're going up against. If they're going up against, like, it's Donald against one of, if not the best offensive line in the league. You know, if Donald could get any pressures, then that's some going when you're up against that tough and offensive line. Like you're saying, Carr going up against, you know, our guys, they disrespected them. Like you said, they're average at best. It's not a fair comparison to make.
No,
to make comments but look, he done it with ease. Yeah, he did it with ease because look who he was breezing by.
Yeah. you know, and yeah, I will give fair credit to Carter. He looks like a bloody beast, you know.
Really,
you know, he should have been probably the third or fourth pick if it wasn't for college stuff. You know, the guy is talented. There's no argument on that one, you know. But, you know, maybe when Aaron Donald retires, he can take over his crown as the best D tackle in the league. But, you know, he's still got a long way to go before he takes that crown, personally.
Yep, absolutely. So moving on to what's happening elsewhere in the league. So once for the first time in history, we had a back-to-back London game with the same team. So the Jags remained in London last week, trained here in the UK, and took on the Bills at London and the Tottenham Stadium this time. Andy, did you watch the London game? All? I unfortunately didn't see any of it.
I watched the game, mate. It was a good game overall, to be brutally honest. It was definitely, you know, it was again one of them as a neutral. It was much better than the previous week's outing, to be honest. But you know, I don't think there's much. You know, the Jags are starting to get it together. You know, at the right time, and obviously, you know. But for the Bills, it's just, you know, they've lost a couple of guys now. Major, you know, they lost Matt Milano in the game with a broken leg. So it looks like he's basically done for the year. They lost Tre'Davious White the week before. They lost, you know, basically their defensive line. It seemed to be every other player they were having to bring someone in because someone was going out injured, you know. I think this shows a difference. They arrived Friday afternoon and then tried to play the game on Sunday. Eagles have been... Why do I keep saying the Eagles? The Jags have been here all week, so we're obviously accustomed to the time. So I think, you know, a little bit of that come into it as well, you know, that they were maybe a bit jet-lagged and not 100%. And I think this is why, for this week's game, I think, you know, the Ravens have looked at this and went, no, we need to get out there a bit earlier than we thought, you know, so we can get the players adjusted. Because I think it did show on especially towards the end of the game, there was mental mistakes, there was drops again, there was just little things that you could clearly tell was probably just from jet lag and tiredness.
That was one thing we did say last week would be interesting to see in the game, because it's the first time a team has, you know, went back to back.
Yeah.
So it was interesting to see what would the Jags be like with a full week, you know, here, and like basically what, like you're saying, it showed.
Yeah, but you know, I'm not taking nothing away from the Jags. They played very, very well, but you know, the Bills, unfortunately, must say it was more injuries and tiredness that cost them the game. But I thought it was an entertaining game myself, you know.
Yep.
When I watched it, I really enjoyed it.
Just as you mentioned there about the Ravens, so the Ravens obviously have came over the pond along with the Titans for this week, and they take on each other at the Tottenham Stadium at 2:30 this week. Thoughts about that game, Andy?
But Tottenham, the Titans, Ravens, is going to be an interesting game. You know, can the Ravens bounce back from, I'm going to say, was the weirdest loss I've ever seen in my life. I don't understand how a quarterback, you know, fair play, this wasn't on Lamar. The guy played out of his lights. It's just his receivers that they seem to have got coaching off the Kansas City Chiefs wide receivers coach, because they just could not catch a cold this week. Everything that came in their hands, they were just dropping. So it'll be interesting to see how they bounce back. You know, the Titans, they're a good team on defense. They're well organized. They can grind games out. And if they can keep it close, they can sneak a win. But I do expect that, personally, the Ravens will probably just be too much for them. And Lamar will just have another good day.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd just be hoping and praying that his wide receivers this time can actually catch something.
We'll see, yeah. So this week's obviously the last London game, and then the international series will move over to the German side of it, which we'll talk about more next week. Any other games in the league, Andy, that piqued your interest this week?
Yeah, there's been a few. Obviously, Chicago getting that win against Washington.
Well, what was the number on the amount of days it's been since the last one? like 370 or 80 or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, something daft like that. But they actually, the last couple of games, they look like they're finally starting to get things together a little bit.
But do they want to be doing that, considering right now they hold the number one and two pick in the draft? Because in that position, I'd be like, no, no, let's try and keep them because of, you know, hoot belt. I'll come on in a second about they can't really pick Caleb Williams now, which will come about.
Yeah, well, that was the thing I was just about to say is, you know, I think this now opens questions up for them in terms of, is Justin Fields actually a franchise quarterback they can move forward with or not? And that could make things very interesting for them. Last couple of weeks, to be honest, the guy has looked like he's starting to get it together now. You know, obviously, small sample size, but, you know, I think there's going to be some awkward questions getting in that building soon. But yeah, it was a dominant display by them, and they just, Washington, I think Riviera, as much as, you know, everything Riviera has been through, I just don't see him being the coach next, come the end of the season. I'd be very surprised if he lasts much longer with, you know, for a defensive coach, just how bad their defense is playing at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Other games have sort of piqued my interest. New Orleans managed to blow out the Patriots. I never saw that coming in a million years. You know, and it answers, opens up questions. Is it maybe time for Belichick to retire? And does this finally show it was actually Brady, not Belichick, all along that made this team relevant? Because since he's gone, this has got worse and worse. You know, and I think, unfortunately, I think it's time to say that maybe the game has passed by Belichick now, and it's time for him to hang up the boots.
And he's been what, coach for well over, well, in excess of 20 years. Century, if not more, at this point. So it's one of those ones that maybe it is time for, you know, Bill to, instead of going to McDonald's looking for a new Mac, maybe he needs to be, you know, hanging up the headset and just, you know, riding off into sunset, because, you know, people are now, they're joking online about, they can't believe in their lifetime they've witnessed the Patriots go from a mediocre team to a dynasty team back to a mediocre team.
Yeah, it just, like I say, mate, it just feels like the game has just bypassed him now, and his, you know, his whole roster building is just really questionable. What the hell he's, you know, he's they're doing.
Like you said, it looks like it was Brady that.
Yeah, it's beginning to feel that way. Yeah. You know, and I say, who knows what they're doing, but it'll be interesting to see come the end of the year if he just retires or, you know, they kind of get rid of him. Other games that we can talk about, Detroit, Carolina. There's been a lot of talk. Is now, can we start putting Jared Goff back into that top 5 to 10 quarterbacks? And I think the way the guy's playing, yeah, I think it's safe to say Detroit Lions have got to be up there as a playoff Super Bowl favorite with the way they're playing at the moment. And Goff himself is, you know, he's playing like the Goff I think we wanted to see. And, you know, for a few years we did see until it kind of went stale and he went. But I mean, I'm made up for the guy that it seems he's found this perfect place and he's playing with a lot of confidence and all, you know, he's getting the reward and the justification that he needs, that he is actually, you know, it's not just this season, it's like the last 8-9 games of last year as well. You know, he's played 15-16 games now at a very high level, and it's nice to see that the talk is coming back to him, that, you know, he's getting that respect again to his name. But like I say, they do feel like, honestly, the team that if you were going to put a sneaky sort of outside £5 bet on for a Super Bowl team from the NFC, I'd be tempted to put my money there.
I think they're definitely a stick on for winning the division. So
yeah,
they're definitely going to be in the postseason. It's just how far they'll go in terms of the postseason, I guess. But, you know, I think they're a potential dark horse. There was signs of it last year. I think there's signs of it again this year. They're definitely one of the dark horse teams in the NFC. And, you know, as we said last week, it would be good to see.
Do you know who they honestly remind us of? For who the Lions at the moment remind me of?
Who?
Us and our Super Bowl run. few good players, but a lot of depth, a lot of, and people were like, oh, they'll make the playoffs, but then they'll struggle and suffer, you know, all the way through. Oh, they'll never make the Super Bowl. You know, they're just, they don't have the, you know, the star talent throughout the whole team, you know, that other teams like, you know, the Winers do and that. And we kept knocking them. They just remind me of us and on the Super Bowl running, you know, where everybody was like, yeah, you know, they're the dark horse. They might make the playoffs, but they'll get spanked in the playoffs. You know, they might get through the wild card. You know, they're going to get out, knocked out. And we just kept going. And they just remind me of us that we'll just, they'll just keep going and going and just magically get there and, you know, do the job.
It's actually quite a fair comparison to make when you think about the Lions as a whole, and you think of their roster. They have good players. They've got a couple of players with potential to be maybe great, but you know, it's not like against other teams where they're like, you can see, like, well, I could count on both hands, like, good players they've got on both sides of the ball, that keep them in that, like, best team in the conference kind of chat. Whereas, you know, the year we won it all, you know, we went for a whole month and didn't win a game. And people were like, no, they're not going to make the playoffs this night. And we turned around, you know, in December, went a run at it, and then, you know, won it all. And yeah, no, you're right, because when you actually draw it down, you think about it, the Lions are a team that are potentially capable of being that kind of caliber of a threat within the conference and a threat in the playoffs.
Oh, yeah, exactly. You know, there's just something about them, you know, and if we're not going to make it, I think they're probably the team in the NFC I want to root for, that I want to win it, just to, you know, just something about them. I just like how they play, like I said before, and I like their coach as well. I think he's doing a fantastic job.
Yeah.
I suppose the last other game we need to talk about is the Sean Payton, Nathan Hackett Bowl. You know, and the fact that they got beat, which is just like, you know, it's completely shut them down and shut him up, which was fantastic to see, to be brutally honest, because I can't stand Sean Payton. I hate the guy anyway.
There's reports of, like, one tweet described it as civil unrest in the Broncos locker room.
Yeah.
Purely because they just don't rate Payton as a coach. They think they're like, he's totally overrated. You know, he's ridden on his luck in New Orleans and, you know, had an all right career there, I guess, but he's not actually that great of a coach.
Another thing to say that
there's the Broncos roster isn't the best, but they have got a few decent players in there that should help, should on paper at least elevate them to be better than what they actually are.
Yeah, but yeah, so I think it's safe to say that, you know, Hackett won that one because he actually got his offense to beat them. And, you know, they've took Breece Hall off that snap count. What was it, 170-odd yards and a touchdown the guy ran for? He just ran all over him all game. So, you know, it just clearly shows that, you know, it's just one of them games because of all the stuff at the beginning of the season, you know, in preseason and that, it was just like, nice to see that, you know, who was going to win that one and finally have bragging rights, and Hackett clearly has the bragging rights. Yeah, and then obviously I'm not going to talk about them, but obviously they kind of smack the Cowboys. I actually expected it to be a closer game than it was, but you know, this, I mean, yes, let the Whiners keep winning, because when they come to the postseason, they always choke it and lose anyway, so who cares?
The one thing for me is I can't even believe that they're trying to get Brock Purdy in the conversation. Oh, this guy could go for MVP. Like,
no. The guy is very much like Jimmy Garoppolo. He's a system quarterback.
Yeah.
He plays great in their system because their system has a lot of 15, 20-yard checkdowns. If you've seen that guy attempt to throw a deep pass, he either can't get the ball there, or B, it's completely inaccurate. So they just don't bother scheming deep shots open for the guy because he just can't do it. He's very much a system quarterback in a very quarterback-friendly system, which is why they've had success with Jimmy G and whoever else has dropped in there. You know, even the likes of Nick Mullins were having success you know, looking like competent, you know, quarterbacks. You know, I think Purdy's playing well, don't get me wrong, but I think all this hype is just, you know, you could stick any, you know, I'm sure if you put Zach Wilson in that offense, he'd look competent, which, you know, again, he didn't look too bad this week. You know, he seems to be getting confidence, but, you know, if you stuck anybody in that team with how they run and how they play the game, they'd be good. I'm sure if we stuck John Wolford in there, he'd look competent. So, you know, that's saying something.
That is saying something. And that wraps that up. So moving on, we are now week 6, folks. And that sees us, I can't even spell the name right. It just shows you how much I think about them on the graphic. I'll just connect that up. We welcome the Cardinals at home to SoFi Stadium. In this week's matchup, 9:25 kickoff. Thankfully for us, it's not in Sky Sports. Woo-hoo. Andy, we are 2-3 against, no, sorry, no, we're 3-2, sorry, I mean, against Cardinals. Can't spell the name right. Can't pronounce the name right. You know what? It could be worse. Mike Carlson on Channel 5, like 20 years ago, used to refer to them as the Crads because they were that crap. They were just called the Crads to him.
Yeah.
So, yeah, week 6 against the Crads at SoFi. Andy, how do you think this is going to go?
Everything on paper says we should win this game with ease, but it kind of feels like, again, one of them, we always seem to have those games every year, the banana skin game, where we just seem to slip up, and this just has that horrible feeling it could be one of them for me. But I'm hopeful, and you know, if we play as well as we can, we should beat these guys with ease. But like I say, I just have this feeling this could be that banana skin game, you know. And we haven't won at home yet so far this year. You know, we're 2-0 at home, so you know we need a home win.
We badly need the home win. You're right. But
this just, I say, it's just one of them. Just something about this game just makes me feel like this could be a slip up moment for us.
Did you see that during? I think it was after. Early in the week, it was that the Cardinals are potentially talking about moving on from Murray.
Yeah, I think that talk's been going around all year. You know, problem is he's going to want to take his contract. That's the big issue. You know, he's going to want to take his contract on.
Well, and you know, with like teams being so high on, like, you know, quarterbacks, you know, being intelligent, learn the game, and you know, like, you know, scouting, you know, against other teams, he wants to take on a quarterback that would rather play Call of Duty as opposed to watch team tape for their own team as well as the team they're coming up against.
Yeah, you know, I can. It would be interesting if they did what they'd get for him and who'd actually want him, to be brutally honest. You know, yeah. So I think it's one of them. It might be that they're just putting the feelers out to see if there would be anybody and then they'll make a decision, because I think, you know, they can still put them off IR and, you know, keep them, or they can just keep them on IR for the year and then bring them back next year, hopefully, you know, healthy. But I don't know, it just, we'll just have to wait and see on that one, mate, and see what exactly happens. You know, it wouldn't surprise you if they did get rid of him because they want to, you know, start a fresh new coaching staff, get rid of everything, you know, Cliff Kingsbury related, and you know, they don't, but then why, you know, why have they paid him in that case?
Yeah.
If you were never truly set on the guy, and you know, you're going to have to either lose some severe draft capital for a team to pick up his contract, or you're going to have to kind of take on a large hit of his contract to be able to, you know, move on from him. So it'll be interesting to see what they do moving forward. But yeah, I'd rather they kept them, to be honest, than lost them, because I don't want Caleb Williams playing us twice a year, because I would be very annoyed.
Well, I was trying to find the tweet just back to Caleb Williams, because I've seen a tweet going about during the week, and it listed, apparently he's disclosed somehow, the list of teams he'll consider playing for. Otherwise, he's staying in college. Don't think the Cardinals were on that list. The Bears definitely weren't on that list anyway. We weren't even on the list.
No.
I think the team he really wants to play for, and they've already got a quarterback, is the Dolphins. They've got Tua. They're set there. So, I mean, for Williams to think that, you know, that's where he would want to go, he's not thinking his head there.
I can't remember, though. Did the Dolphins pick up his 50-year option for Tua? That would make it interesting, because then that would make it easier for them to move on from him.
Yes, they did. Back in March, they said,
"All right, yeah, I remember they did or not."
The 5th-year option, and he'll get $9.63 million. So yes,
yeah, they did. Okay, I couldn't. I thought that was one of the teams that didn't pick up a 50-year option because of the injury questions to him from last year. But obviously, they must have decided they were happy with it.
Yeah.
I mean, 50-year option, you can still get out of it easy enough. It's just dead cap, nothing else, you know. So, but I don't see the Dolphins picking high enough to even have a shot with them.
No. So, I think more likely, we talked about it. I think it'd be more likely if, you know, when you say there doesn't want to go Bears, I think it's more likely you would see someone like the Patriots trade up to go for them, because they kind of would need a quarterback with the potential that Williams is being talked about.
If Belichick's still there, though, as a quarterback,
if he's still there, that is, yeah.
But that may be. Would you want to go there? With how dysfunctional, not even that, how you know, they don't draft what, you know, and don't bring in good wide receivers, they bring in trash.
Well, that's it, yeah. There's a lot of talk. I've made it clear my feelings on Tom Brady in the past in this podcast, right? I'm not going to rant about it again, but say what you want about Tom Brady. There's the whole, I'll take less money if it means we can get better players elsewhere for me to target. There's not many quarterbacks out there in the league that are like that. I mean, I don't know, new people are joking about, like, Brock Purdy, for example, getting paid like a pittance compared to some of the other quarterbacks, but there's not many quarterbacks out there that are going to go, pay me less so you can get someone better that I can target and we can make a run at it. And Caleb Williams coming out and saying, like, I can make more money if I stay in college. I don't think he's the type of one that'll be like, yeah, pay me less so you can go get good receivers. And like you said, the Patriots will just go get, like, garbage in. But they're the type of team that I could see trading up to get him, because I think he might have been listed. The Patriots might have been listed on list. I'm trying to find the tweet because I seen it the other day. And the first thing I thought was, well, all this talk about, oh, let's tank for Caleb Williams. If this isn't even half true, we're not a team he wants to play for.
No, again, the thing is, if he did decide to come out, you know, would he necessarily, you know, trades can happen at the deadline. Is he going to turn around and go, well, I don't want to play for you? Kind of, you know, I think it's more just noise at the moment until he physically comes out and says, you know, I think it's going to be the end of the college season. What does he decide to do before the draft? Does he decide to go, stay or go?
Yep.
You know, that's going to be the interesting one, you know. And just because the team's got the number one overall pick doesn't mean they're necessarily going to want him. If they've already got, you know,
that's the other thing, yeah. I mean, like,
you know, if, say, for example, the Texans have got the number one pick, you know, if they've played well so far, but, you know, there's still potential. They've got CJ Stroud. They're set.
Yeah.
Are the Panthers, you know, the Panthers are the only winless team now in the league. If they get the number one pick, they don't have their pick. That's why so ignore that one. But I mean, you know, if Houston are the number one pick, are they going to, you know, potentially, you know, give it up? And basically say, well, we drafted CJ Stroud this last year, but we're going to give up on you and bring. No, they're not. They're going to bring someone else in, you know. So all of a sudden, his choices kind of change a lot more. So I think a lot of this is his agent noise at the moment, yeah. And, you know, trying to see who and what they can do rather than, you know, I'd be very surprised if somebody didn't want. I think Raiders was one of the teams that was on his list. I think of the two.
Raiders were. Yes, I saw that the Raiders definitely were, yeah.
Do you really want to go to Josh McDaniels, though, as your coach? No. Not mind you, that's, of course, if the guy's still there. But again, you know, that they're it's a dysfunctional organization. Do you really want to go to somewhere like that? Well, yeah, we'll see what happens, mate. As we you know, throughout the year, we've got a lot of football yet to go. Everything can, you know, change. He could go out and get injured next week, and basically that's it. His draft stuff's tanked anyway. So, you know, there's a lot to go between now and then.
That's a lot can happen between now and then. So that wraps that up. So moving on, let's turn our attention to fantasy football.
Oh, do we have to?
what happened, Andy? What's wrong this week?
I cannot catch a win no matter what I do. Honestly, I've and then my only player who's played consistently throughout the whole season, you know, and is getting top scores each week, is now IR for the next god knows how many weeks. So it's kind of like I've just give up at this point. I think I'm just destined to finish last in the division and stay there.
Andy, if you've not guessed, is not doing too well. He is sitting bottom of his the Aaron Donald division. 1-4.
Yeah, like I say,
it's one of those ones, mate. Looking at your conference there, there's a few other teams that, you know, on the same boat as you. And then we've got, you know, WHU, FC Matt, he moved to 5-0 this week.
Yeah,
so that guy's
killing it.
As for me, I had a hell of a game actually this week. I took on Chris from the LA Rams UK team. Chris, who unfortunately is not doing too well. He's 1-4 himself. He's propping up the bottom of the Vermeule Conference, the only one on 1-4. I moved to 3-2, but I moved to 3-2 by point. I think it was 0.2. Oh. I won by. And the most annoying thing was that I had my bench. I had Dallas Goedert on my bench, and he got like 23 points. And there was another guy. Who's the other guy I had in my bench? I'm just checking. And someone else. I basically had like 46 points in my bench, and I would have ran away with the game. It's just typical. Because looking at Goddard's stats, he hadn't been doing good the last few weeks. I thought, I'll bench him this week. And it's the one week where he absolute balls out, and he was the lead receiver for the Eagles.
Yep, that's always the way, mate. That's what's been happening with me. So that's what I'll say. I've had to make a change this week because obviously one of them's out in IR now for the next God knows how many weeks, potentially this season. So I had to, unfortunately, make a few changes because of that.
I made a change myself. I cut Koo from the Falcons in favour of Sanders from Dolphins. Because out of everyone I've got, Koo is the least performing player I had in my team. But like,
yeah, you know, you watch Koo will go off and you know week for the next team.
I think it was actually. Not this week, the previous week, he'd actually cost me a chance to win my matchup. I would have been sitting bloody 4-1 if it wasn't for him. But I'm doing okay, actually. I'm sitting second in my division, which I'm quite happy about. It's not so, but we'll see how it goes. Like last year in fantasy football, I think I went to something like 3 or 4-0, and then I went and lost 6 in a row. So I'm happy so far, but I'm just waiting for it to capitulate, put it that way. But in general, in my conference, it's quite tight actually. So there are 4 teams on 3-2, including my own team. 1 team on 4-1. There's 4 teams on 2-3, and then 1 team 1-4. So our conference has been since the start of the year, the season. It's been quite tight and looks like it's going to remain that way. So it just shows you the Vermeule Conference, 5 weeks in, is basically a game of inches for us. So interesting to see how that develops. Is there anything else, Andy, you want to bring up or talk about before we wrap up?
No, mate, I think that's just about it. I think we've basically covered everything now. And let's move on to next week and hopefully we can get the W and, yeah, finally get our first home win of the season.
Yeah.
Which will be nice and get back to 500 on the season.
Yeah, I'm sure we will go back to 500. Just on the topic of next week, folks, if you're listening slash watching, there will be a double drop next week. There'll be two episodes coming out, so you'll have the usual episodes where Andy and I will be back. We'll go over the Cardinals game, preview the Steelers game, just all the usual stuff. But before that, we are hitting our 100th episode of the podcast. And to celebrate that, we have reached out to some of the OGs, as we mentioned last week. So we'll be putting together a wee episode just to kind of reminisce about the first 100 episodes of the podcast. So you can look forward to two episodes going out next week, folks. And so with that, that about does it for this week of the podcast. So just remember, folks, you also can follow us on all social media platforms, apart from TikTok, because we don't get time for TikTok. Do our best to kind of get close to the other ones. So we're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. You can join our Discord server if you go on our Twitter account, for example. I think Insta is the same. You'll find our link tree's got a link to join the Discord server. You've got us here on YouTube at Alien Rams UK, where you can like, subscribe, turn your notifications on. You can get notifications when we're going live, so that you can even drop comments into us live if you wish. And apart from that, if you've got spare change, you can always throw us a wee cup of coffee. But that does it for episode 99 of the Alien Rams UK podcast. Andy, thank you very much for joining me. Always a pleasure.
Yep, always a pleasure, mate. And we'll see you next week. And hopefully we'll all be happy again. And hopefully I'll start winning some games in fantasy, though I'm not expecting it the way I'm going.
You never know, mate. There's still plenty of time for everything to turn around for both yourself and for the Rams. But with that, folks, we will catch you next time. Good night.